If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Bulwark Takes. The fallout from the collapse of U.S.-Canada trade negotiations this weekend, the launch of this bold new trade war between Donald Trump and Canada, continues to grow today. I'm Andrew Egger with The Bulwark, here to talk about it with our economics correspondent, Catherine Rampell. Catherine and I did a video yesterday. A lot of you watched it. We ran the numbers. About half of you who watched that video aren't even subscribed to the channel. So what's the deal with that? Please remedy this. Go down there, click the like button, click the subscribe button. It helps us out. Don't be a freeloader off of our content. Okay, that's enough of that. That's enough of that. Catherine, we've had a lot of new stuff on this story today. We've had President Trump weighing in, Vice President, Treasury Secretary Bessent, various Canadian leaders. Let's just hit some of that first right here off the top. This is what President Trump had to say just this morning on Truth Social. Canada has been ripping off the United States of America for years. Their ridiculously high tariffs on our farmers and farm products has made life impossible for these great American patriots and has long created a $60 billion deficit between our two countries. Not sustainable and not anymore. On January 1st, 2027, tariffs on all cars, trucks, both large and small, automotive parts and steel will be increased to 50%. That'll help the farmers. Big new auto tariffs build in the U.S. and there are zero tariffs. Canada will be treated like a state no longer on trade and in other ways. Also, they are among the worst nations in the world to deal with. They feel entitled, and yet we don't need Canada. They need us. They do 95% of their business with the U.S., with us the exact opposite. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So there's the president, the vice president, maybe even more unctuous and sort of impossible on this matter. Let's hear from him. He was actually speaking today and had this to say.
Canada and China have been the two worst countries when it comes to trade policy anywhere in the world. What a shame that is. China, you of course expect. They're our biggest economic competitor. I would expect that from China. I would not expect that from Canada. We have to remember, Canada is a state. Sorry, Freudian slip. That was actually an accident. Canada is a country that has underinvested in its military that quite literally would get invaded by a foreign country were it not for the umbrella of protection provided by the United States of America.
Yeah, we're all having a lot of laughs. I don't know what planet these guys are living on. Canada's a close trade ally. They have been forever. It's been enormously economically beneficial to both of our countries. Apparently, that's not going to be the case quite so much anymore. Catherine, I don't know. What do you make? What do you make of the president and the vice president's take on all this before we get into the nitty gritty details?
I am a red blooded American, but I feel extremely indignant on behalf of our neighbors to the north in Canada. Pretty much everything that we just heard is wrong. Not only is Canada a major economic partner, it is also a major national security partner. That comment that J.D. Vance made about like they can't defend themselves. The only time that, you know, the NATO authority has been cited to get allies together on behalf of one of the NATO members was the United States, and Canada joined in that effort. So this is after 9/11, of course. So the idea that like they're freeloading off of us is just bull. And then just to dig into some of the specific economic claims here. Donald Trump is saying that the evidence that Canada is freeloading off of us or ripping us off or whatever is that we have a trade deficit with them. Leave it aside that a trade deficit is not evidence of anybody ripping anybody else off. These are like mutually agreed upon trades, whatever. It's a stupid measure. But if you are going to take Donald Trump at his word about the fact that like trade deficits are bad, which again, I do not. The reason why we have a major trade deficit with Canada is because we import a lot of oil from Canada. In fact, I looked this up before we started talking, and our energy deficit with Canada, it's about $85 billion. It's more than four times the size of the overall trade deficit with Canada. So what that means, just to put this in context, is that outside of energy, the U.S. actually runs a huge surplus with Canada. So again, the reason why we have a trade deficit is about energy. So you would think maybe Donald Trump would like be up, if he really is trying to minimize our deficit, he would try to shrink that those imports that we are getting from Canada in the form of energy. In fact, he's doing the opposite. Like, he's just so confused about what his actual objectives are that meanwhile, he is trying to revive the Keystone XL pipeline. If you look at that map, you will see it is bringing oil from Canada to refineries in the United States. That is why we have a major energy deficit, why we have a trade deficit with Canada. It is all about importing that oil from Canada to refineries in the United States. Trump wants to expand that. Whether that's going to happen, separate issue. But like, he can't keep track of what his own objectives are. And so at the same time that he's saying like, we should be really mad about how we're buying so much stuff from Canada, he is trying to buy more stuff from Canada. So I don't know. I realize it's like, it's a fool's errand to try to make sense of any of this, but like all of these contradictions just get under my skin.
Well, this is why it's so frustrating, right? To see something like trade policy and just all of these little minutiae of these trade agreements get elevated into this totally different register of culture war, basically, where when you see the president and the vice president and all these people talking about this stuff, none of the things they have anything to say about have any connection to any of the nitty-gritty of like what you're getting into right now. It's not like, well, Mr. President, sir, why are you saying this stuff about how Canada rips us off and they're an impediment to our, you know, golden age flourishing and all these sorts of things, when if you look at this chart, you will see X, Y, and Z, right? No, that's not the level that they're operating on at all. They've just gotten the bit in their teeth now that, you know, Canada is basically part of the resistance, that they are, you know, the deep staters to our north, and that therefore they have to be smashed and humiliated and belittled. And meanwhile, all of that smashing and humiliating and belittling creates all of this political animosity among just normal Canadians that then incentivize Canadian politicians to not, you know, do the silly, stupid song and dance that most world leaders do with Donald Trump, where they're like, please, sir, may I have another? You're so right, sir. We were taking advantage of you and you were so smart and you saw through us, but we're not getting away with it anymore. You know, that just the ridiculous stuff.
This segment is sponsored by the New York Times. You know, sometimes a story comes along that perfectly captures just how strange Washington has gotten. New York Times just broke the news that House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries met privately with Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law and outside advisor, to talk about potential areas where Democrats and the Trump administration could actually work together. That meeting raised several eyebrows, including this one and this one. But how did we know what happened? What was discussed, and why does it matter? That's where fact-based reporting comes in. The foundation of what we do on this show is reporting. We can have opinions, arguments, and takes about the news. God knows Will and I both have those. But somebody has to actually go out and find what happened first. In this case, New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman and Annie Carney spoke with five people with knowledge of the meeting and reported the details of this unusual conversation between Jeffries and Kushner. The Times is just one of the sources that I turn to stay informed. Whether it's the Times, the Wall Street Journal, your local newspaper, or a reporter who you trust who covers a particular beat, could be Data Republican. Good commentary depends on good reporting. The Jeffries-Kushner story is just one example of the result of fact-based reporting, and now you get to decide what to think, because without fact-based reporting like this, the rest of us are just guessing. Wherever you seek it out, nationally, locally, support fact-based reporting.
These Canadian politicians would be punished by their own voters if they were to take that approach. And so instead, we have turned them into a nation that is economically hostile to the United States and is going to try to punch back and is going to try to hurt us for no reason, over nothing at all. Let's listen in a little bit on what a couple of these Canadian leaders have been saying just today. First of all, here's Prime Minister Carney talking about Canada's suddenly very urgent effort to go elsewhere, to find new trading partners elsewhere in the world to integrate more closely with, since America can't be trusted anymore.
This fall, we will begin intense discussions with the European Union, the world's second largest economy, to build a much stronger and deeper economic and security partnership. Now, we can build such unparalleled access because we're trusted, because we're reliable, and because we have what the world wants.
So that's the prime minister, but it was not just the prime minister. Other Canadian politicians have been speaking out and throwing their support behind essentially Canada's increasingly militant posture toward trade with us. Here, for example, is Doug Ford. He is the premier of Ontario. He is a conservative. I mean, the parties there are a little different than the parties here, but he's basically a center-right populist type guy who has been very critical of these tariffs. This is his much more colorful way of talking about his posture toward this current new trade war.
I was just wondering, you sound a little more subdued than you did this morning on the radio when you said Donald Trump could kiss your ass. Did the prime minister tell you to ask you to tone it down a bit?
No, he didn't. I'm not going to comment, but he wasn't against that. And I have a lot of real estate on my ass, so he has a lot of room to kiss my ass. So
well done.
I just do. I'm a big dude. What can I say?
A little self-deprecation there, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, they don't seem like particularly cranky about the whole thing. They don't seem like, you know, at their wit's end with rage. But I mean, they really do kind of seem geared up to just move forward into this future they didn't ask for, where the United States is basically an economic adversary for the time being. And I don't know. I feel like I'm losing my mind with all of this.
Absolutely. Well, you say that it's not as like evident that they're enraged, but I wonder how much of that is just different like cultural norms, and that this is like going to 11 if you're a Canadian in terms of rage, whereas in the United States, somebody would be much more animated or much, I don't know, we would express emotions differently here in the United States. Canadians are very polite, not to stereotype, but that's a good stereotype. Canadians,
that's what they all say. I don't know. I've seen some angry Canadians in our comments over the last couple of years as we've covered these trade issues. I mean, with good reason, because it's crazy. Yeah. Like, I mean, it really is insane. But just to drill down on that point, I mean, yeah. I feel just so nuts, just watching it all unfold in real time, of them saying, all right, we've been trading with the United States. That has been going super well for basically everybody involved. Guess we're not going to be able to do that anymore. No real reason why. Donald Trump has these beefs around dairy farmers, and I guess there's disputes over light trucks and the import tariffs we have on those. And so instead, we're going to be at war with them. They're going to go off. They're going to trade more with the EU. They're going to trade more with the United Arab Emirates. Did you see there was this statement from China out this morning, basically applauding Canada? Can you walk people through that? I mean, this is just like, I genuinely feel like I'm going crazy when I read things like this.
So, yes, there was a story in Bloomberg that was quoting Chinese state media, in particular, the nationalist tabloid, the Global Times, praising Canada's retaliation against U.S. tariffs, casting Ottawa's move as validating Beijing's opposition to Washington's protectionist trade policies. They called Canada's action a, quote, Chinese-style counterattack, unquote, in an editorial. So I think this is pretty telling that we have been driving our closest of friends into the arms of our adversaries, including China. China sees this opportunity and is seizing it. I also looked up some data that I was thinking about yesterday when we spoke, Andrew, about favorability, how favorably Canadians feel about China versus the United States. So if you look at the numbers back in 2023, so not that long ago, 3 years ago, Canadians had a 57% approval rating, favorability, 57% felt favorably towards the United States. Now that's down by almost half to 33%. Meanwhile, China is actually doing much better in Canadian eyes, from 14% to 44%. So it's not just that the United States looks worse, it's that China is also looking better. And so it's not like it would be one thing if Canada were developing closer ties with the EU or Australia or other countries that we think of as having Western liberal values, liberal democratic values. it is concerning that Canadians are willing to overlook some of the horrible human rights abuses and other reasons why Canadians might rightly feel skeptical towards the Chinese government and its policies. Now, according to Canadians, the United States is worse. And it's probably because, in part, we had such a close relationship between, you know, the United States and Canada. And so there's this like sense of disillusionment. Actually, Chrystia Freeland, who was the finance minister and I think the deputy PM, she has a book coming out called something like Unreliable Boyfriend, which is her metaphor for how Canada sees the United States. You know, we should be much more loving toward Canada than we actually are. And so I get it. I understand why Canadians are pissed off. The thing that is more puzzling to me is why this administration is so willing to visit economic pain upon our own population. Like, I understand Donald Trump wants to bully Canada, right? Like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying I endorse it, but I understand, like, he wants them to be a vassal state. He and J.D. Vance are going to insult them and try to push them around and make all of these crazy demands.
It's base-pleasing. Yeah. The mooks, they cheer.
Exactly. It's base-pleasing. But the actual tariffs that we are talking about will be very painful to that base. So maybe his base is like very into the culture war aspect of it that you were talking about, Andrew. But I cannot imagine that they will be into the actual tariff piece of all of this that's going to raise costs and probably destroy a lot of jobs here in the United States. That part of it is just like perplexing to me because we have so much evidence so far under Trump and prior to Trump about how damaging these kinds of policies are and will continue to be.
Yeah, yeah. I agree that it is perplexing on one level. It's perplexing that any politician would want to do this. It is not necessarily that perplexing on the psychological level when it comes to the mind of Donald Trump, because he just likes tariffs. I mean, this is just a thing we've known about him for quite some time is like, I feel like there have been 50 or 70 of these stories in a row where it's like, well, hold up now. Why are we putting all these taxes on our own people and all these unbelievable burdens on, you know, the small businesses in America and on importers and all these sorts of things? What is the point of that again? And it has always just come back to just Donald Trump doesn't think that that's the way it works. He doesn't trust economists. He doesn't trust the macroeconomic data that is coming in to suggest that this is what is in fact happening. All he has is his own bedrock belief that tariffs are good, that trade wars are good and easy to win, that if he wants to prop up a specific industry with a tariff, that they will be really grateful. And then the costs that are diffuse, he just doesn't even really look at them or pay attention to them. But there has been like an unstoppable force meets an immovable object like element to all of this, because he's been putting tariffs on everything for like a year and a half. So it's not like you can really prop one guy up and then have the costs, you know, diffuse over here and not really be felt. They're felt everywhere because they are everywhere and they're dragging stuff down. And yet here we are again, pursuing the greatest anti-Canada trade policies of March 2025, apparently until the end of time, until the end of the world. We're going to be doing this stuff because he just doesn't care about these inputs. He likes tariffs. He really likes
tariffs. Okay. So there are a couple of things that I would say here. Yes, it is absolutely true that when he tariffs one thing, that hurts the downstream consumers of that thing, which might be American firms, right? So he's like been tariffing steel and aluminum, which hurt American auto companies. And maybe he doesn't make the connection somehow. Like he thinks, oh, the steel, you know, US steel workers or whatever, they're going to be really excited about this. And he doesn't think about the downstream consequences. That's possible. What's confusing about what's happening right now is that the auto industry itself is freaking out about Trump's announced tariffs on autos. And the reason why is that there is a lot of integration across borders. We got into this a little bit yesterday because various parts of a car can cross borders multiple times. Actually, there was this great story in the Wall Street Journal last year where they followed like just one random car part. It was like a piston or something. And it shows that it crossed borders with Canada and with Mexico six times. That's just this one little part, right? So it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And presumably under the Trump regime, it's going to get tariffed by however much every time it goes across borders. And it doesn't seem like they're going to credit anybody for, you know, tariffing the other way, whatever. Now multiply what's happening with this piston by all of the other parts in the car, the steering wheels and the engines and the batteries and everything else. All of that stuff is just dramatically damaging for the U.S. auto industry because these supply chains are so interconnected. Like, what happens when, if and when, it seems like when, Canada has its own retaliatory tariffs over the similar parts going across the border the other way, just the entire industry could potentially grind to a halt. So if you consider, you know, UAW workers or anybody else working in this industry as part of Donald Trump's hardcore base, they will be hurt. And it's not like an unforeseen consequence. This is the desired consequence that he basically wants this trade to stop. And again, like, I know he's a tariff man and he loves tariffs and we should just like hand wave away the fact that none of this makes any sense. But there's so much evidence. And like, he has to know, he has to be hearing from, you know, Ford and GM and other major players in the industry how very, very, very bad this would be. And yet he seems to be barreling forward anyway.
Well, I guess we're going to find out, right? I mean, there's one thing that has ever shaken Trump off of a tariff action, and that was the bond market going belly up in the wake of Liberation Day last year. I don't think, you know, at least this first level of tariffs with Canada right now is going to rise to quite that like global economy halting, you know, recession bound judgment day scenario that we got then. So we know that the pain level exists that Trump could feel that would cause him to back off very promptly. But we don't know exactly how far we'd need to get. And we do know that there's a lot of pain that he has been willing in the past to tolerate, or tolerate's not even the right word. It's like he doesn't know it exists, right? It's like he discounts it. He thinks people are just trying to trick him or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
I think the other piece of this that complicates the analysis is that like markets expect the taco, right? That Trump always chickens out. And so markets don't react as much as they should if they were to take these threats at face value. And so therefore the feedback mechanism gets broken. Trump doesn't freak because markets aren't freaking out because they expect him to back off. He doesn't freak out and may or may not back off, right? Because like he never gets that signal. And so it feels a little bit like that gets broken. And because it gets broken, it doesn't temper him and could potentially cause things to go really, really haywire. Who knows what this president is going to do and how erratically he's going to behave. And to the extent that we could have a moderating force, that moderating force is assuming that he's already moderate or he's moderated. And if he goes like, you know, if they're not tempering him and his staff isn't tempering him and they're not giving him the right data about how damaging these things are, in the meanwhile, like we're degrading our relationship, obviously, with Canada and just slowly wearing down on these industries because like even if they don't think Armageddon is necessarily going to happen, there's still this paralyzing uncertainty. So,
yeah,
it's all bad. Yeah. It's all bad. Yeah.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen. I am, however, willing to make a few predictions. It'll be stupid. We won't like it. And we will be here to talk about it. So I guess we'll end it there for now. As more stupid bullshit comes in over the transom, we will dispatch it out to all of you people, as is our job and our duty, really. You know, you get to hear about it from us. Hopefully that's better than hearing about it somewhere else. At least that is one small service we can provide, I guess. But thanks, Catherine, for coming and talking about all this stuff. Thanks to you all out there for watching, for listening. If you ignored what I said before about that subscribe button, there's still time. Get on down there, right? You know, you wouldn't want to miss. You wouldn't want to miss the next piece of content after the next stupid tariff. So the easy way to do that is subscribe to The Bulwark. Thanks, and we will see you all next time.